The great saint Narada Muni continued. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods, dared not come forward before the Lord. Everyone, even Brahma and Lord Shiva, were afraid of Lord Nrisimhadev because at that time he was extremely angry. Prabhupada's purport. I will read the continue going a while first. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who, because of fear, could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who, because of fear, could not do so. The demigods couldn't go before him. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. Thereafter, Lord Brahma requested Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing very near him. He said, "My dear son, Lord Nrisimhadev is extremely angry at your demoniac father. Please go forward and appease the Lord." Narada Muni continued, "O king, although the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj was only a little boy, he accepted Lord Brahma's words. He gradually proceeded towards Lord Nrisimhadev and fell down to offer his respectful obeisances with folded hands." We'll read the Prabhupada's purport to the second verse and then read his purport to the first verse and then continue. Second verse purport. We read from the last paragraph. For the common men, the form of the Lord as Nrisimhadev is certainly unseen and wonderful. But for a devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearsome form of the Lord is not at all extraordinary. By the grace of the Lord, a devotee can very easily understand how the Lord can appear in any form he likes. Therefore, the devotee is never afraid of such a form. Because of special favor bestowed upon Prahlad Maharaj, he remains silent and unafraid, even though all the demigods, including even Lakshmi Devi, were afraid of Lord Nrisimhadev. Narayana Paraksave Nakutasthana Bibhyati. Not only is a pure devotee of Narayan like Prahlad Maharaj unafraid of any dangerous condition of material life, but also if the Lord appears to mitigate the fear of a devotee, the devotee maintains his status of fearlessness in all circumstances. And we'll read Prabhupada's purport to one. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung in his Prem Bhakti Chandrika, "Krodha bhakta dvishejane," anger should be used to punish a demon who is envious of devotees. Kama, krodha, loba, moha, mada, and matsarja, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy, all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. A devotee of the Lord cannot tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or his other devotees. And the Lord also cannot tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. Thus Lord Nrisimhadev was so very angry that even the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune who is the Lord's constant companion, could not pacify him, even after offering prayers of glorification and praise. So he was still unsatisfied, unpacified, not at all peaceful. No one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger, despite the prayers of these powerful demigods, rishis, etc., kimpurushas, kinaras, yakshas, Brahma, and even Shiva. No one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger, but because the Lord was willing to exhibit his affection for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods and the others present before the Lord push Prahlad Maharaj forward to pacify him. Prahlad just agreed. They asked him to do it. Lord Brahma asked him to do it. Svapadamule patitam tabab abarkam vilokya deva kripaya paripluta utapyatat trishni adhadat karambujam kalahi vitrasta diyam kritabhayam. When Lord Nisringadev saw the small boy Prahlad Maharaj prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic in affection towards his devotee. Raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees. Purport. The necessities of the material world are four: ahara, nidra, baya, maituna, eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. In this material world, everyone is in a fearful consciousness, sadasa mugna diyam. And the only means to make everyone fearless is Krishna consciousness. You know where is that from? Sada vimugna diyam?
It's 5.5.
Is it? Asat grahat. Hitvatma patam griyamandakupam vanam gutoya. Isn't that what it is? Everyone is fearful in this world. Why is everyone fearful? Because everyone is in a precarious, dangerous position in this world. Everyone. And what is everyone afraid of?
Death.
Losing something that they cannot take with them, that they're attached to. Yeah. So many things we fear. Think for a moment. What are you afraid of? I'm not we're going to ask everyone. But think of what the thing you're afraid of most now at this particular phase in your life. Is it something connected with the body or something connected to... There's always something we're afraid of. Always. And it is not us. Because we as souls can never lose what is actually ours. When Lord Nisringadev appeared, all the devotees became fearless. The devotees' hope of becoming fearless is to chant the holy name of Lord Nisringadev. Yato, yato, yami, tato, Nisringa. Wherever we go, we must always think of Lord Nisringadev. Thus, there will be no fear for the devotee of the Lord. Text 6. Or we can chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. There will be no fear. If we always chant. By the touch of Lord Nisringadev's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely freed of all material contamination and desires, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Therefore, he at once became transcendentally situated, and all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body. His heart filled with love, and his eyes with tears. And thus he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. Same thing happened with Dhruva Maharaj. He saw the Lord, and the Lord touched him with his kancha, and he could offer prayers. And now Prahlad, his love has deepened due to the Lord's touch. And he captured the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. Very sweet. His heart felt filled with love, his eyes with tears. So because of his love, he was able to capture completely the Lord's lotus feet within the core of his heart. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nisringadev with full attention and complete trance because the Lord was in his heart, he could easily fix his tear-filled eyes upon him. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers and love with a faltering voice. So his mind was transcendental, fixed at the Lord's lotus feet. Now we're going to read 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 5 verses of Prahlad's prayers. Now let's see what Prahlad's going to say. Remember, all these great personages were unable to satisfy, to cool down the anger of Lord Nisringadev. And Lord Nisringadev's anger was immediately pacified when he saw Prahlad, the object of his affection, before him. So he lifted Prahlad up. He touched him with his hand. And Prahlad began to pray in his ecstasy. Now, what is he going to say? How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons were very qualified, being in the mode of goodness. Then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified. Understand what Prahlad has said here? How is it possible? Look at these qualified persons. Even Lord Brahma has offered his prayers. Because when one is angry, there is dissatisfaction in the heart. And when dissatisfaction and satisfaction cannot exist side by side. So he was so angry, Lord Nisringadev was. But as soon as he saw Prahlad, he became satisfied because love, Prahlad's love melted his heart. And no more dissatisfaction. Purport. A Vaishnava who is fully qualified to serve the Lord still thinks himself extremely low while offering prayers to the Lord. For example, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says, Jagai marai hoite muni sapapishta puri shera kita hoite muni salagista. Thus he considers himself unqualified, lower than the worms in stool, and more sinful than Jagai and Madai. Jagai marai hoite muni sapapishta puri shera kita hoite muni salagista. So he really, really, really thought of himself in this way. A pure Vaishnava actually thinks of himself in this way. Similarly, although Prahlad Maharaj was a pure exalted Vaishnava, he thought himself most unqualified to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. This was his self-conception. Unqualified, full of horrible qualities and lacking good qualities. Similarly, although Prahlad Maharaj was a pure exalted Vaishnava, he thought of himself most unqualified to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. Mahajano yena gata sipanta. Every pure Vaishnava should think like this. One should not be falsely proud of his Vaishnava qualifications. Now, how is it possible to be qualified and think oneself fallen? Prahlad was certainly qualified, but yet he thought of himself unqualified. Yes?
Because these qualities are beyond the pale of the material world.
Yes. But look, just look at his, look what he said. There's the answer. He found so many causes of disqualification in him, and these causes of disqualification overrode any feeling that he had of being qualified. So what did he say? The demigods headed by Brahma and all the saintly persons, they're all in the mode of goodness. They spoke streams of excellent words. They're very qualified, being the mode of goodness. I am born in the family of asuras. Asura means a low birth. How is it possible? So he took something true. And he saw that, and didn't he saw something true that was a disqualification, and saw that, and that that vision made him forget his qualifications. And what were his qualifications? That he was seeing Krishna, he was fully dependent on Krishna. So, what does the conditioned mind do? it looks at whatever qualification that we may have and overlook all the disqualification, and that becomes so big in the mind. Look what I've done, look at this, look at that, that we forget whatever disqualification is there. But the exact opposite is required. And therefore Mahaprabhu says, instructed, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarodapi Sihisnara Amanina Manadena Kirtanaya Sadhari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, because if one feels oneself low and unqualified, naturally he'll be tolerant. If one has a very high conception of himself, I'm so wonderful, I'm so qualified, then there will be no feeling of tolerance. How dare they say this to me? How dare they do this to me? So the tolerance is born of humility. Devoid of all sense of false prestige. One be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. So false prestige, falsely thinking ourselves significant, we should be devoid of that sense of self as significant. And on the other hand, what should our sense of self be? That I am a servant. And what kind of a servant? An insignificant servant. We can't be anything more than an insignificant servant, because I'm so tiny and I'm going to die. And even if someone, I won't be alive in 100 years or even 50 years, but even if I'm alive another 50 years, in 300 years, or 200 years, or probably even 100 years, no one will be alive and will even remember that I existed. How does that make you feel? No one will even know that I was ever in this world. And I'm so important. I'm so significant. So this is called Maya. Maya makes someone who's insignificant feel as if he is significant. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others, because who am I? And this person see the good qualities in others and allow the disqualification. Who will say that they have no disqualification? Who will say that? Who will stand before the Supreme Lord and say, I'm so qualified and I have no disqualifications? So if you have disqualifications, well, what are they? So bring them out, at least to oneself. Think about those. Whenever we're angry at someone for all the horrible things they've done to us, we can think about our own disqualification and see if they're so far from wrong. Of course, it has to be practical. But to cultivate this mood before offering prayers to Krishna, because what's the use of praying to Krishna? Because ultimately one prays for mercy or a benediction or something. What's the use if one's feeling oneself qualified and wonderful and exalted and powerful? How will we be able to pray and evoke mercy from Krishna's heart? Not possible. So unless one is meek and humble, to make progress in spiritual life is very difficult. To continue even in spiritual life is very difficult. What to speak of progress? Humility is proportionate. Our humility is proportionate to our advancement. So the first thing Prahlad is teaching us, before he even begins his prayers, is the proper mentality and what is required to satisfy the Lord and what he had. So here's the first gift that he had, is humility. Text 9. He continued. One may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster. Who was very lusterous that we heard and who got himself in trouble? Yes? Specifically it talked about his great luster? I don't know. I'm not saying it.
Oh, Daksha.
Daksha is the one that I was thinking.
Yeah.
Everyone, oh, Daksha's come. Influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic powers. So here again, it's reiterating what we read from that previous verse that, of Prahlad's words, of what can't satisfy the Lord, explaining on his way to explain what is the only thing that does satisfy the Lord. Because it's obvious that, okay, why can't wealth satisfy Krishna? Is because however much wealth we have, he has unlimitedly more. And an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, he has all these qualities. What can we show him that will please him with our teeny, tiny abilities and tiny hands and our insignificance? We cannot do anything. So again, 7752, Prahlad is saying the same thing now as he said then, that these things cannot satisfy the Lord. None of these things. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Gajendra was an animal. No kind of material qualification, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, is the means for satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very important, because Prahlad is teaching Bhagavad Dharma, the activities or the religion of attempting to satisfy the Lord, acting for his satisfaction. So we first have to know, if we wish to practice this process, what is it that will satisfy him? And before we were being introduced here to what will satisfy him, we're hearing what won't satisfy him again. We're again hearing this. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, only devotional service, by devotional service, can the Lord be known. Bhaktimam avijananti. Unless the Lord is pleased by the service of a devotee, the Lord does not reveal himself. Naham prakasya savasya yoga maya samapita. This is the meaning of the Lord being independent and his causeless mercy, that there is nothing we can do to force that mercy to come. It's causeless. He is swatantra, he is independent. He does as he likes. And when he is pleased, he tends to like to give his mercy. Or we can say that he will give his mercy, but his mercy won't take necessarily the form that we expect. Sometimes he holds himself from revealing himself to a devotee because he wants the devotees to increase their eagerness to see him. Sometimes he wants to test the devotee to see what he really wants. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said about his Guru Maharaj, Srila Gokaswara Das Babaji Maharaj, that I have examined the character of my Guru Maharaj and have seen that only a Vaishnava can actually have character or integrity in this world. Because there is nothing a Vaishnava, there is nothing that the world can offer to bribe or cause the Vaishnava to give up his ideal, his character, his integrity. The world cannot offer anything because he has the greatest wealth. So it is only a Vaishnava who can actually have character and integrity in this world, because he cannot be bribed, he cannot be seduced. The world can't offer him anything because he already possesses. A Vaishnava means he possesses the jewel, the valuable jewel, the lotus feet of Krishna. So what, having that, can the material world offer? Just things that are flickering. Shadows, smoke, ashes. The Lord does not reveal himself. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. This is the verdict of all shastras. Neither by speculation nor by material qualifications can one understand or approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And yet, even if one is an animal, as Gajendra was an animal, an elephant, one can satisfy the Lord if one has devotion. Even if one is a demon, like Vritrasura, he satisfied the Lord with his devotion. So we're coming to the point very directly. More. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmana, because the devotee can purify his own family, whereas the so-called Brahmana, in a position of false prestige, cannot even purify himself. So a devotee is transcendental. What does that mean? He is beyond the modes. That means he has taken shelter of Krishna. That is what it means to be a devotee. Krishna is his shelter, and he doesn't want anything of this world. So a Brahmana is in the mode of goodness, and the devotee is beyond that. We'll read just from the end of the purport. Prabhupada says in this purport to 10 at the end, "We have had actual experience of how Americans and Europeans, because of their full Krishna consciousness, have purified their whole families." So this is explaining more about the verse where a Brahmana can't even purify himself unless he's a Vaishnava, and a Vaishnava can purify himself and by his association purify his family. And Prahlad Maharaj is the example of that. And here Prabhupada is giving a contemporary example. "Because of their full Krishna consciousness, they have purified their whole family so much so that a mother of a devotee at the time of her death inquired about Krishna with her last breath." So there must have been an experience that one of the devotees wrote to Prabhupada or told Prabhupada about. "Therefore, it is theoretically true and has been practically proven that a devotee can give the best service to his family, his community, his society, and his nation. The foolish accuse a devotee of following the principle of escapism." But that means, what does Prabhupada mean by escapism? Not performing one's duties, just trying to avoid one's duties. Yeah, escaping from reality. So other times we would say that very good to escape from the material world, because the material world means it's martyaloka, and everything is temporary here. But here he's explaining that the devotees are actually doing the best service. They're not escaping from their families. They're doing the best service for their families, for their community, their country, etc. "The foolish accuse a devotee of following the principle of escapism, but actually the fact is that a devotee is the right person to elevate his family. A devotee engages everything in the service of the Lord, and therefore he is always exalted." Text 11. "The Supreme Lord," so this is more Prahlad speaking, The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering by the Lord's mercy is for the benefit of the devotee, for the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. So there is no need to separately decorate the mirror image, the reflection of one's face. You just decorate your face and automatically the mirror image is decorated. Automatically. So if one just satisfies Krishna, then one himself becomes satisfied. There is no need for a separate attempt to satisfy oneself. It is like what from the fourth canto? Like watering the root of the tree, the branches are automatically watered and providing food to the stomach. The rest of the body is automatically nourished as well. Tushti pushti tudapaya anu gasam. So here the point is that Prahlad is making that it is in the living entity's interest. It's not that Krishna needs anyone's service. He is the all-powerful. He can do everything by his own energy. And if we don't do a service, can we cause inconvenience though? Can we say, Krishna doesn't need my service, so I have a particular service to do, so I won't show up on that day, I won't do it, or I'll just neglect it, or it's too hard. And what does Krishna need for my service? It's for my benefit, and I won't take the benefit today, for these few weeks. I'll let someone else become fortunate. What do you think about that attitude? And he quotes this first to prove it.
Bhakti is based on duty. I mean, the foundation of bhakti is mostly based on duty.
But service. This is my service. So we should take our service until Krishna changes our service, yeah?
Well, you know, the mentality that you were describing doesn't really lay much foundation.
It certainly doesn't. No enthusiasm.
One understands that it's up to one's great advantage to do service and do it enthusiastically to please the Lord, then we'll do it. You know, there's no reason to not do it.
Except that it's too hard a lot of the time.
Well, that makes it great. that's where the real progress takes place, and it's hard.
The battering ram has spoken. the harder it is, the greater it is. Yeah. Austerity.
If we renounce the benefit by this act itself, we lay claim to it. We claim that it's ours to renounce.
Say it more, a little more simply.
In other words,
the benefit being?
Such a person says, okay, I don't want to take this benefit today from the devotional service. By this is also a fruiting mentality. You cannot renounce what does not belong to you, really.
Yes, it's not automatic. It's not mechanical. You do service and you advance. You do service and you advance. It's not automatic. It all depends. It's not mechanical. It depends on mercy. That's the point on it. And also, if we look at it, as also John Rastrupa was saying, this is our offering. And what is bhakti? It's trying to please Krishna. Who's the center? Who's the center? Krishna's pleasure has to be the center, not what I feel like doing today or don't feel like doing today. So that's the point that we should bring ourselves back to is I'm a servant, and what's my service? If my service is to make this particular offering today, it's my great fortune to make this offering for Krishna's pleasure. I'm a servant, I'm a servant, I'm a servant. That's where bhakti begins. Let me do it with love. That's bhakti. How fortunate I am to have the opportunity to make this offering today. I'm a servant. The whole thing, it doesn't revolve around me. Krishna consciousness is not about what I like to do and what I don't like to do, or what I think is good, or I think is favorable, I think this, I, me. Krishna consciousness is about putting Krishna in the center. And that's what Prahlad wants to teach us, that we're servants, and the servant acts to please the master. And when we decorate Krishna in that way, naturally, just like when we decorate our own face, that's the part of the comparison of decorating Krishna. Naturally, that we're also decorated. Naturally, we become happy, we become pleased, we become satisfied because we're in our natural position. Because by nature, it's natural to serve Krishna. For him to be, it's completely unnatural for me to think myself the center. This is the point, the difference between bhakti and material consciousness. So is this difficult? Is it difficult to not think of me in the center? It certainly is after countless births and countable years in this body of me thinking of myself in the center. It's the great shift that bhakti is supposed to, for bhakti yoga to occur, this must happen, that Krishna must be the center. In bhakti yoga, here's Prabhupada's purport. It is recommended that a devotee follows 9 principles: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atnana Vedanam. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on is not, of course, meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended for the benefit of the devotee. Because one may think, does he have some lack of some personality disorder or something that he requires? He's made the living entity that they can't be happy unless they glorify him. Does he have some kind of a problem that he needs this for him to be happy? And so Prabhupada is answering that doubt. And we laugh at it, but I've heard someone say this. A person on a video even, imitating, you know, Hare Krishna, saying he, you know, God's like that, he has some kind of a problem, you know, and then he imitated singing his name. You know, if I needed everyone singing my name to be happy, for me to be happy, just imagine what kind of a person I'd be. And you say, so therefore, God must be just like me. Not understanding the actual self-satisfied nature of Krishna, and not actually understanding the nature of the soul, and as the soul becomes satisfied, when he satisfies Krishna and glorifies Krishna, as every preacher, as every person who's done any servant or chanted, experiences that we are the ones who are lacking. It's not Krishna is lacking when we don't glorify him. When we turn our back on the sun and see only shadows, does the sun feel bad or its potency diminishes? Or we are in darkness. We are tiny. He is great. So this is why we are recommended not to speculate about God and just follow and read and hear the philosophy. Otherwise we come up with these type of concocted conclusions and thoughts that don't have anything, which are with just us thinking that God must be like me. I am tiny, and he is exalted and unlimited, but yet with the finite mind thinking he must be like me, trying to measure him. So it's not meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended to, for the benefit of the devotee. Krishna is not lacking fruits, flowers, or water, or leaves. And therefore, because he lacks them, he's asking us to give them with devotion. It is not like that. It is for us. We require Krishna's association, yet mysteriously, he misses us too. Not in a philosophical sense, because he's fully self-satisfied. But yet naturally, being his part and parcels, he's fully satisfied, in fact, in Goloka Vrindavan, with all the residents of Vrindavan. But the devotees carrying his desire, they know that it is for us, it is for our benefit, so therefore they carry his Kripa Shakti. And therefore, bring us, help, serve us by bringing us to him. So the Lord is always glorious, whether the devotee glorifies him or not. But if the devotee engages in glorifying the Lord, the devotee himself automatically becomes glorious. Teto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadvagnina vapanam. By glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart. And thus he can understand that he does not belong in the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness so that he may become free from the material clutches. Such a good word. The material clutches, the claws of material nature that have caught us so deeply. So what did you hear in that sentence which is so important? Such relevant, important instruction for us. I'll read it again. Please listen carefully. There is one word that really captures the attention. By glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart, and thus he can understand that he does not belong to the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness so that he may become free from the material clutches. We are clutched by the material energy. We are caught in the claws of material energy. What word stood out? Yeah, constantly. If we want to advance to this point, to be actual devotees, we have to hit the point of constancy, of chanting, of glorifying, of serving. Otherwise, we don't become purified to the core of the heart, to the essence of who we are. The false ego remains intact. But if we take shelter of Krishna's name constantly, then the false ego dissipates. It dissolves, it disappears. So if we want to know why we don't get the results that we had hoped we would get, here is the answer in that one word, constantly. We are getting the results that we deserve. Yeyatam mam prapanyante, proportionate to how much we're actually surrendered to Krishna. Any comments on that? The material clutches. We are clutched. Mama maya dratyaya. We are clutched. But mysteriously, we are holding on. And if we let go of the material energy, bhunte prakriti janiha karanam guna sangasya, we would be freed. And therefore, Thus, the blazing fire of material existence is immediately extinguished. Immediately, if we do this, constantly chant, there is no material life. If we glorify Krishna constantly, there is no material existence. A foolish person is amazed that Krishna orders Sarvadhamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja, abandon all varieties of religious activities and just surrender unto me. Completely give yourself to me. Place me in the center. Become my servant, Krishna says. Glorify me. Offer your obeisances to me. Focus your mind on me. Some foolish scholars even say that this is too much to demand. But this demand is not for the benefit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, it is for the benefit of human society. Sometimes we think it's too much to demand in the sense that we would lose our individuality. But actually, it is a placing of Krishna in the center, which is our individuality. There is no actual loss of individuality. It is not like surrender in the sense of, okay, don't shoot me, whatever you want, take my money, like that. That's not what surrender, that's not what, it's not this kind of surrender. It's based on love. It's based on putting Krishna in his actual position and ourselves in our actual position, acting to please Krishna. We've attempted for so long in this life and in previous lives to place ourselves at the center. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj was telling his classmates. It just simply doesn't work because it's constitutionally backwards for a soul. But as soon as we place Krishna in the center, which means thinking of what will be pleasing to him, and that's exactly what Prahlad Maharaj gave as the example. Just as we please ourselves, we should think of pleasing Krishna. And then the whole thing is reversed. No more material life when that's constant. It's very simple to understand. It is very difficult to do because of this extremely long-term bad habit we have. And so much dirt and dust covering the mirror of our consciousness that when we look at that mirror, we don't see ourselves. We just see the dirt and dust that we've accumulated for births, for so many births. So therefore, Chaito Dalpana Manjanam, we take advantage of Mahaprabhu's mercy, his grace, gracing the instruction of Kirtaniya Sadahari. So if a human being individually, if human beings individually or collectively surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness, all of human society will benefit. One who does not dedicate everything to the Supreme Lord is described in this verse as a vidusha, a rascal. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord himself speaks in the same way. Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradama maya aparitagyanam asuram bhava ashrita. He's taken shelter of asuram bhava, the mood of an asura. If we surrender, we're in the mood of Prahlad. If we don't surrender, place Krishna in the center, act for his pleasure, we are in the mood of Hiranyakashipu. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest amongst mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Because of ignorance and misfortune, the atheists and the Naradamas, the lowest of men, do not surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although the Supreme Lord Krishna is full in himself, he appears in different yugas to demand the surrender of the conditioned souls so that they will benefit by becoming free from the material clutches. In conclusion, The more we engage in Krishna consciousness and render service unto the Lord, the more we benefit. Krishna does not need service from any of us. He has how many servants in Goloka Vrindavan? He has countless number of servants, countless, billions and billions of Lakshmis, goddesses of fortune, of gopas, of gopis, of cows, of mothers, unlimited. He doesn't need our service. But it is for our benefit that we serve. So far we've heard of Prahlad feeling himself unqualified to satisfy the Lord. But he's saying here that it is my benefit to glorify you, so let me do that. So who is he thinking of? He's thinking of Krishna. He knows that automatically he'll be benefited. Therefore, although I was born in a demonic family, this is the final verse we'll read, text 12, which has a short purport. Although I was born in a demoniac family, I may without a doubt offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor as far as my intelligence allows. Whatever our abilities are, we can make our offerings to Krishna regardless of our birth, regardless of anything. This is the right, regardless of time, place, and circumstance. We can always, always make offerings to Krishna. Anyone, according to our capacity, or as Prahlad is saying, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's glories. So here's the process that Prahlad is speaking of. So we should listen very carefully to his words and see what great jewels we can gather from his words that we can practically apply to our lives. But just the fact of hearing the glories of Krishna, just that process of hearing, we don't have to do anything else, practically speaking. Just by the process of hearing, that purifies the heart and brings great benefit, because that is devotional service, as he said in the previous verse. Prabhupada's purport. It is clearly understood that a devotee does not need to be born in a very high family, to be rich, to be aristocratic, or to be very beautiful. None of these qualifications will engage one in devotional service. With devotion, one should feel God is great and I am very small. Therefore, my duty is to offer my prayers to the Lord. Only on this basis can one understand and render service to the Lord. As Madhavendra Puri pointed out, it is based on duty. Because this is my natural position. To praise, to serve, to glorify. And this was the first thing, practically speaking, that Prahlad told his schoolmates. Priya Atmaishwara. I'm sudit because Krishna is our benefactor. He is naturally dear to every soul. He's the source, if we're talking about in terms of time, although the souls are eternal. We're his energy. And he is near and dear to the heart of everyone. He's priya, it's beloved. He's the controller. It's just completely natural. It's unnatural to turn our back on him. It's unnatural to turn our back on him. And contemporary civilization is trying to point out that what the most important thing is economic development. It is not turning towards the Lord. And therefore we have conflict with contemporary civilization on this basis. It's not that a material advancement is terrible, but making that the priority, not service to Krishna, the primary, putting it in its proper primary place, that's where the argument is. And because everyone, instead of following the Bhagavatam Shastra and the learned priests or whatever of whatever culture, of whatever from whatever religion, because people are following the scientists and the scientists are saying, or at least the propaganda coming out is atheistical and that there is no God because we cannot prove his existence empirically. Because of that we have argument with the scientists and why Prabhupada was preaching so strongly and criticizing them so heavily. Because this culture and the scientific technological culture turns people away. The innocent, foolish, blind, following type of people, they turn away from God and turn towards sense enjoyment and economic development as the purpose of life, and therefore they waste their lives and have to suffer so much. So Prahlad preached in this way, and now he will begin to speak to the Lord directly of this. And now what he's saying here is the basis for pleasing Krishna is this mood. This is the basic mood with devotion. You are my Lord. With devotion, not mechanically. One should feel God is great and I am very small, and therefore my duty is to offer prayers or some service to you. It is completely natural. But in today's civilization, it's everything is upside down. So-called civilization, we have to say it. Everything is upside down. It's natural for the children to serve parents. It's natural for youth to respect elders. It's natural to have respect for the government. It's natural. And everything is upside down and backwards. No one has respect for the government. Children want their parents to serve them, and parents think that their duty is to serve their children in that way and listen to everything they say. Everything is upside down. This is Kali's work, and it causes complete quarrel. Because authority has proved itself corrupt, that's what Kali does. Corrupts authority and gives everyone... Just see, how could I follow this authority? Look what they've done. They're not happy. This, that, they're cheaters, they're this and that. But there's such a lack in everyone's heart because of this. It's natural to serve Krishna. It's natural for the soul. And if you remove this unnaturalness of sense gratification, economic development, then it almost springs right back into place quite naturally. And this is what culture is about. On this basis, one can understand and render service to the Lord. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam abhijananti yavanis chasmi tatvata tatomam tatvato gyatva visite taranantanam. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Thus Prahlad Maharaj decided to offer his best prayers to the Lord without consideration of his material position. It's natural. It's not, doesn't have anything to do with the fact that I was born in a demonic family. It's natural for every soul to take shelter of Krishna. So, on Narayani Mataji, will begin with the actual prayers of Prahlad, and they'll go on for this chapter and the next, or part of the next. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
You were quoting a verse, or part of the verse, Priya, dearness.
Yeah. It's the second verse in one Palad, after Komaram Acharet Pragyo. Vishnu Pado Upasarpanam Tad Esha Savabhutanam Priya Adneshwara Srit Tapri Shashaya.
The text mentions that when the Lord touched Prahlad Maharaj's head.
To some degree, this is answered when Krishna enters. When Krishna's birth, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a commentary about Krishna's birth that says that he is the eighth son. And before Krishna can enter, there has to be certain things removed. Kam Krodh, that's the first six, the sons. Kam Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsarja, and Mada. So those were the six sons that are killed. That's a purification of the heart. But yet something else has to occur too, and that's the seventh son, or Balaram, or the Sandini Shakti has to enter the heart, the living entity, to make it a dham, to make it suitable for the Lord's actual entrance into the heart. So, simple purification is not enough. Simple removal of material contamination is enough. The spiritual energy has to enter the heart for one to actually engage in Krishna service. So that doesn't specifically answer the particular question the way you phrased it, but I answered the question in a different way. What does something else need to be added? Some other blessing need to be added for one to actually be able to properly serve Krishna, which is what Prahlad is doing? And the answer is yes. There's something that's purification, but also something else from above descends.
And he didn't have a
to be touched by the same thing with Dhruva Maharaj. He needed to be touched too. Even though he was seeing Krishna, right, or Krishna Gaurava right in front of him. So, how much of this is pastime, or a direct sequential philosophical exposition of the process is another question. Because he was already seeing Krishna prior to this, he already was established in full relationship with Krishna. But yet, this is how it's described. That may be the best I can answer this at this point. But maybe someone else can answer first. Anyone want to comment on that?
What's the question?
What is the question of Prahlad? Because Prabhupada in his purport, after he was touched, Prahlad was touched by the hand of Lord Nisringadev, and that purified him still further and allowed him to offer prayers. So the question was, what is the question of him being purified still further? What is the question of him needing that? So, that, yes, did I get the question right?
Yeah, specifically about the material desires. That's really gross.
Okay, what verse is this? Let's examine it a little more. But there's also maybe some subtle... Text 5. Because from Madhurya Kadambini we see that there are certain things that up to the point of prema, there are certain subtle contaminations that still remain in the heart. The reaction of offenses, for instance. And very, very subtle. Like if there's a bottle of wine and you pour everything out, there's nothing left in it. So you can say there's no wine in it. What's needed is there any more for any more purification? But still there is some subtle fragrance of wine that still is clinging to it. So for us to say the bottle is ready for a different substance to hold prema, then that's very, very subtle things also have to be removed. But that wasn't also exactly your question. So let's look at 5 and see what Prabhupada said. Was it 5 directly? Yes, his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees. With the purport. He'd been, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. He was by the touch of Lord Nisringadev's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely free of all material contamination and desires, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Okay, let me just see over here. Okay, read it. Please.
There was a seeming inauspiciousness in Prahlad because of his birth as in a demon family. He could not get a direct touch of the Lord. So that.
Oh, Prabhupada actually says the same thing in his purport.
He usually places his
on Vishnu. He says, in the last paragraph on 6, on the strength of these verses from Bhagavad Gita, it is evident that although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a demoniac family, and although virtually demonic blood flowed through his body, he was cleansed of all material bodily contamination because of his exalted position as a devotee. In other words, such impediments on the spiritual path could not stop him from progressing, for he was directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That seems the same. But was there any more?
Then he says he lost his good words.
Which is seeming is what's Prabhupada's, that point of Prabhupada's purport indicated.
So, like he says, in principle, one who is born as a demon doesn't have a possibility to touch and have any other contact with the Lord. And that's the symptom which appears as inauspiciousness. So, that was removed, that was nullified by the touch of the Lord. He showed
the seeming. Yeah, because he was already seeing the Lord constantly. Previously, he was in touch with the Lord as Paramatma. But specifically, the question seemed to be about what contaminations were removed. So the seeming contamination of his demoniac birth is what both Vishwanath and Srila Prabhupada following him say. So how do you remove a seeming contamination? I suppose you can. So that's the tricky part in it. And there could be something somewhat more cultural in there that we don't have as much access to, not being the Vedic culture not being existing, because they were very strict about who could do what and how is it possible that. But once the Lord touches you, then anything seeming contamination from birth is clearly gone. So it's something a little tricky, perhaps. Yes, we'll finish.
Why Lakshmi Devi, Brahma, they were fearful. And, Prabhupada, in the report to the next section, he was describing how devotees are free from fear.
But Lord Nisringadev was angry. And when Lord Nisringadev is angry, you become fearful. Even if you're Lord Brahma.
Even if you're completely free from material contamination, you have nothing to lose.
But there was something that kept them. They had never seen him in this way. She had never seen this form of the Lord before. He said this too. Somehow his anger was so ferocious that it kept everyone, even these exalted, such exalted personages, back. Any comment on that? On Lakshmi Devi's?
I mean, Lakshmi and Shrina, there's like a fairly, that's a very intimate relationship. I'm not exactly sure.
But not, is Lakshmi Devi there in Ugra Nisringa though?
I'm sorry?
When there's Ugra Nisringa, is Lakshmi Devi there?
Well, we have Ugra Nisringa in Vrindavan, and I think we don't.
There's not Lakshmi. Is there in Mayapur?
There is Lakshmi.
But that's...
Is Lakshmi there?
So she's not there. There's the answer there, clearly. That with Ugra, he was Ugra. The deity. This is him, right? This is angry.
So therefore, that's why there's Lakshmi's been included in the worship. But other forms of Nisringadev than Lakshmi.
Shantiness or Prahlad. Well, when Prahlad is there, then he's peaceful.
There's a lecture where Prabhupada talks about Lakshmi, and because she couldn't recognize him, and being a very most chaste wife, she did not have to approach him, because she just didn't know if it was her husband or not, so she didn't want to approach him.
Yeah.
Vishnu Chakravarti says that even though the Simharupa was already seen in previous kalpas. And even though he is always seen by Kunta, still by the arrangement of Lila Shakti, they felt that they have never seen or heard about this kind of form. And the purpose of this was to create the ravishment of a Buddha rasa, of the rasa of amazement.
Yes.
So
that was.
And Buddha rasa. What is it? So they could relish the Buddha rasa. What's it?
And Buddha Sringa.
Wonder. The rasa of wonder.
Amazement, wonder. That's. Good. Thank you. Not amended yet. Yeah, first.
Regarding the last verse, number 12, where Prabhupada is saying that I have nothing to lose. I might as well offer prayers to the best of my ability, because it will benefit me. So it reminds me of Rasamandala Prabhu in the teacher's training course. He was always used to say, we should never miss a chance to speak in public to glorify Krishna. Even if you don't feel ready, you're a brand new teacher or a brand new lecturer, don't avoid a chance. He used to stress that a lot in his teacher's training course. So it reminds me of that instruction of Prahlad also. That you should just...
Just to add something. And also, but we should balance that with, I'm a servant, is this my service?
Yeah, sure.
Because if there are other people speaking, I want to speak. I don't want to miss a chance. And maybe a chance for other people. By Krishna's design, it's maybe not our service. Maybe our service is just to listen. But Rasamandala Prabhu meant something different. If we're given an opportunity to preach, we should take it. Prabhupada also told me that.
Or even to give a class.
Prabhupada said, it is my standing order to all my disciples, at that time it was all disciples, but to all followers, that if Krishna, that you should preach. If Krishna gives you an opportunity to preach, you should take it. Yes, Paul.
This point, you know, we brought out this, you described as a real important sentence in the ending of your mind, whether it's referencing this by glorifying or constant in the purport to text 12. Now, does that, can the service itself be resultant in glorification of Lord, where there's not actual glorification? Let's say someone's putting together a promotion to attract people to come to the temple. You know what I mean? And it's about all kinds of computer technology and things like that. I mean, is there a equivalent benefit for, just going on the street and selling a book? You know, the book that glorifies the Lord, completely. But then the devotees, you know, when he's selling the book and he's not so much, maybe not so full of glorification. So how does that work?
Long as he's full of service. Huh? Long as he's full of service. The serving mood, because you can put together the brochure, or you could sell the book in many, many, many varieties of moods. But the mood that they're talking about is constant service or constant glorification. Glorification being one of the items of devotional service. So to get the result, the mood of service has to be there. And then it doesn't make a difference between what service you're doing, whether you're sweeping the floor of the temple room, as Prabhupada would say, or worshipping the deity, it's the same. But what's the same part that has to be the same is the serving mood. Yes?
So then here's another question.
And then all the services are equal, but it has to be service. The service part is the part. Devotional service.
So here's something that...
So it's gone to devotee needs, to devotee maintenance, to devotee stipends, to devotee salaries, to this is my job, 9 to 5. or 11 to 2. With time out for lunch.
And then they're looking at their relationship with their authority. This is my boss. I've got to do what he wants me to do, otherwise I don't get paid, or I get fired, or I don't get a raise. And, I mean, it just seems like that, you know, this is what Prabhupada, and then there's these quotes about a Brahmin, and as soon as he becomes under the employee of someone, he automatically loses that Brahminical status. So, if you have any insights, it's how to protect the Dapripa, protect the proper mood, but also practically arrange. In fact, we don't live in a Vedic culture where people go out of their way to protect Brahmins. It's really tough in this.
Well, Prabhupada, he has said in the Bhagavad Gita, better to be a sincere sweeper of the street than a charlatan meditator who meditates. Charlatan who meditates just to maintain himself. A showbottle. Yeah, it shouldn't be like that. It's better to have brahmacharis do all the service. Words, that's very simple to maintain. That's what.
That's a matter of the way of management.
Yeah.
Get rid of these grasses.
Not get rid of them, but they shouldn't. Because Prabhupada has said this many times, actually, that if you're a householder, and you're doing essential service, you can get maintenance. But if we can find a way to get brahmacharis to do it and pay no maintenance, then you're going to have no maintenance. You're going to have to find another way to maintain yourself. So when one devotee heard this, he said, well, sounds like I should just go and might as well understand what reality is and get myself some employment now. And Prabhupada said, yes. A householder. Because then the relationship doesn't become one of service. It becomes very difficult. And then instead of, at least there should be, I'm talking theoretically and generally now. And at least those who are living in the temple should be nishkam. If soon as the level of living in the temple becomes sakam, then there's big problems.
Which is
basically what you're saying. And you see also what happens if you're living in the temple, depending on the temple as a householder, the temple will not be able to provide, especially if your family is increasing, enough money for your needs. So therefore, who are you going to criticize? Who?
Well, the tendency would be to criticize the temple manager.
Yeah, of course. And wishing you weren't living in the temple. And then on the other hand, if you're outside working and supporting yourself like that, It was only if I could live in the temple, because it's so hard in the world.
Well, one thought that occurred to me that
this is in general.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many temples go through this problem. You know, the help people, brahmacharis, then they get married, and then they're offered a stipend, and then they start having children, and they need more, and then children start growing up, and they need more, and then some shift in the management changes or something. And then they become so angry and so bitter, you know, after, you know, I've given them 15 years of my life or 10 years of my life, and, you know, it's just better get the vision straight from the very beginning of what reality is. Otherwise, you just become angry at ISKCON generally. That's...
kind of ideal vision I had, you know, particularly to try and develop education and grasses that are genetically inclined, and just protect them and offer them reciprocation in kind, not so much in financially. You know, the prasadam, you know, housing, you know, whatever their needs are, so they don't have to worry about it, so they can focus on the service. There isn't that kind of relationship.
Now, this is a tricky one. This question is tricky, and you can discuss principles,
right.
But then when you're discussing individual circumstances, you really have to get into the details and the people and what the service is. So, otherwise, this kind of discussion can be. You can talk principles in general. Otherwise, it could get in trouble. Give people trouble and anxieties and things like that. Did you want to say something?
I just wanted to, because I remember that Prabhupada also meant the Lord is to have like farm communities.
Yeah, that was his solution to this problem, in fact.
It's not happening.
Yeah,
and then they could be independent, self-sufficient, and not have to associate with non-devotees. And it didn't happen, and that really shifted everything. It shifted the whole Gurukula thing. You know, big, 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 big blank in the strategy.
The one thing that also, you know, there may be problems, you know, if they aren't dependent on the temple. I mean, if they are dependent
on the temple,
they're
going
to have a problem.
If they what?
If their whole thrust to go from the second to the west, you know, it's so expensive, and then economic development becomes their service and their absorption, and then that really takes its toll on their devotional.
Yeah, and what to speak of the association.
Yes.
And the television in the house talking about the west. And then the children try, you know, when your children going to public schools, and then all their friends are watching television, you don't want them to watch television, and then why can't I? Oh my, and there's no peace. Anyway, it's rough. It's a rough world. Okay, but we have to end with a sweet. It's the Lord. And that's how tough life is. Prahlad was glorifying the Lord. We're all yes, pure devotional service, Jai. Okay, where's the sweet? Who's got a sweet? Huh? Oh yeah, but that's Amalaki's has not only sweet, it has all the rasas, not only that one.
Sometimes it is recommended that one should know one's exact status in devotional service to advance further.
Yes.
So the question is, knowing one's level in devotional service involves knowing that one has risen a few millimeters above zero. So, So I heard some devotees saying that wouldn't it be safer to just think I'm just nothing, I'm not a devotee, I have no stature in devotional service, and such a humble mood.
Well, it's like a long journey. Sometimes you have to look forward and see how far you have to go, and then you become humble. And sometimes when you get discouraged, you have to look back and see how far you've already come, because you need encouragement to go on. Hare Krishna.
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrī Nisaṅga Phalāda ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Śrī Vṛndāvana Dham ki jai.
Jai Jai Śrī Rādhe, Jai Jai Śrī Rādhe, Jai Jai Śrī Rādhe.
I needed that.